I will call the meeting to order. Do we have a quorum?
No.
No, okay. Well, we'll do the minutes then when we do have a quorum, but in the meanwhile,
now we do.
Okay, Representative McFarland, the minutes of March 3rd.
I would like to move those minutes, Madam Chair.
Representative McFarland moves the minutes of March 3rd. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And before we start, I want to have all the students who are here for the Minnesota Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America stand up. I know I had one, Heidi, shadowing me, and we have others shadowing others. And I'm going to embarrass them and ask them if they could each say their name and where you are from. I'll start with Heidi because I know she can handle it. She's been helping me out all day.
My name is Minnesota, which is in the southwest
corner
of the state. Thank you. I'm Jacqueline Becker. I'm from Quincy, and that's towards the left central side of Minnesota. Thank you. I'm Olivia Wicklund. I'm from Litchfield. I'm Leah Sylvester, and I'm from Spooner Park. Thank you very much for being here. All leaders, you can tell they can speak clearly and loudly in a big room like this. So thanks for being here, and we've had a lot of fun and learned a lot from them. Heidi actually has been helping us with things that we couldn't handle in our office without her, right, Liz, today. All right. We have today the governor's policy bill, which we have our lead Republican, Representative Garofalo, carrying on this committee, and our goal is to go through it. And I think, Representative Garofalo, would you like to have people ask questions as we go?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think what we'll do is we'll have Assistant Commissioner Quinzing go through the presentation, let her wrap things up, and then if members have any questions about the presentation or the legislation, we can do it then.
Very good. Okay. Let's see. We don't have a bill, or we do have a bill number. Representative Garofalo, if you would please move your bill.
Madam Chair, I move House File 3388 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Omnibus Bill, and there's also a technical correction amendment. I don't know if this has been included in the folders or not.
I do not know it was.
Okay. Well, we will wait until we'll wait until the copies get made, and I'll just move that amendment later on. Madam Chair, members of the committee, what it is there were some typos in the original bill. So there's three modifications to page 7, and we'll move that amendment once everyone has copies of it.
And normally we have a 24-hour rule, but for something technical like that, we'll just take a look at it and do it when it comes in then. So Representative Garofalo moves House File 3388 for possible inclusion. And do you want to say a word or two, or should we go right to Commissioner Quinzing?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the good news for this committee is that in very difficult financial times for the state budget and for the families of Minnesota, that the governor was able to prioritize K-12 education as a leading priority in his budget and hold it harmless and not have it suffer some of the other budget reductions that we see in other committees. And clearly, again, the governor's led this as a priority, and I think it's good news for this committee. But I'll keep my rest of my comments on the legislation until later and introduce for the committee the wonderful and talented Assistant Commissioner Karen Quinzing for today's presentation.
And we welcome, I still want to call her Representative Quinzing because I served with her and on this very committee. But we're always glad to have you here. And members, I too, I'm not shy about criticizing when I don't like things, but I think now, just like last time, the House and the Senate has a big job in keeping up with the governor who did not cut education and is recommending that we pay back the shifts that Representative Garofalo and I highly condone doing, and Representative Dietrich with her bill. So I think we're the luckiest committee in the legislature, and we look forward to going through the bill. So welcome, Commissioner Quinzing.
Thank you, Chair Greiling and members of the committee. What I'm going to do is go through a PowerPoint right now that goes through the main ideas of this legislation, and then we'll have a chance to look with Representative Garofalo, and we thank him for carrying this bill this year, to go through the legislation and really do some detailed look and questions at that. Just to start off, the Plenty administration, Governor Plenty, really has prioritized education in light of the budget troubles that we've been under for a few years. and even in that time still believes that it's not just business as usual, but we need to keep down the pathway of educational excellence. So some of those things that we have done and that he hopes that these new reforms will be able to achieve and build upon are rigorous academic standards and increasing our graduation requirements. And all these are things that have been done with this legislature and the support of this legislative body. We've been able to, as a state, fundamentally change the way we pay teachers by rewarding achievement and encouraging practical professional development, focusing on science, technology, engineering, and math, and even expanding public school choice. We do still have an existing challenge here in Minnesota that we're always trying to problem solve around, and that challenge is to apply greater focus to the teaching profession, since effective teachers and instruction will increase student achievement and close the achievement gap that we so desire to close. In a time of economic deficits, we're trying to tighten our belts and curb spending, but we still can afford a little bit an opportunity for reform. And in education, that means strengthening the qualifications for teacher and principal candidates and paying for their hard work and achievement in the classroom. So in this governor's education supplemental budget, you will see Governor Plenty's supplemental budget protected K-12 from formula cuts. You'll also see small investments in certain areas where we will have significant payoffs for education. The proposals include the Teaching Transformation Act, updating principal licensure, teacher evaluation and tenure renewal act, English language proficiency standards, minimum hours of instruction, teacher contract reporting, and EPAS data collection. The question, why should we focus on teacher quality and effectiveness? It's because we know from so much research that effective teachers will raise student achievement levels and close the achievement gap. Yeah. Dr. Marzano found that effective teachers had a 43% positive impact on student achievement, which is the highest school-based factor, and by comparison, class size only had an 8% positive impact. Data studies from Tennessee show that if two average 8-year-old students were given different teachers, one of them a high performer, the other a low performer, the student's performance diverged more than 50 percentile points within 3 years. And Dallas' study found that the performance gap between students assigned three effective teachers in a row and those assigned three ineffective teachers in a row was 49 percentile points. So in the Teaching Transformation Act, the proposal is to align teacher preparation standards with K-12 student standards, to require that candidates for teacher preparation programs pass the basic skills test prior to entry into the program, strengthen teacher preparation in elementary mathematics, and require teaching candidates to pass a math content exam, require online pedagogy and completion of at least one online course for all teacher licensure candidates, monitor the effectiveness of teacher and administrator programs using student performance data that is linked to the teachers and administrators who have graduated from their institution's teacher administrator prep programs, and incorporate national standards for effective school leadership into the licensing standards for principals. So the governor is recommending one-time appropriations in the amounts of $155,000 in fiscal year 2011, $30,000 in fiscal year 2012, and $20,000 in fiscal year 2013. This is to fund the work to align teacher preparation and K-12 standards, update teacher entry requirements, embed additional math content into the elementary exam, and update principal licensure rules. The Board of Teaching, in order to align K-12 and teacher standards alignments, or standards, the Board of Teaching should adopt a standards alignment review process that correlates to MDE student standards revision cycle. This would assure that newly adopted student standards are embedded with the appropriate teacher licensure rules and related programs. The alignment will increase the effectiveness of Minnesota's teacher workforce because teacher candidates will have instruction in the same standards that they will be teaching to students. This requires a one-time appropriation of $45,000, which is recommended for rulemaking in fiscal year 2011, and $20,000 for rulemaking in each of 2012 and 2013, because we do review different sets of standards in different years. Teacher entry requirements. Teacher candidates should be well prepared for entry into teacher preparation programs. open admission technical and community colleges do not allow students to take general courses until they have been through the remedial courses that make them eligible for those credit-bearing courses. Teacher candidates should be, at a minimum, as academically qualified as college athletes are expected to be. Currently, NCAA freshmen are required to meet eligibility requirements, which, in general, require a GPA of 2.5 or higher, and an SAT score of 820 or higher, and an ACT score of 68. So currently, the Board of Teaching requires teachers successfully complete a basic skills test in reading, writing, and math to become licensed. Yet, teachers may be issued a limited license and allowed up to 3 years, providing evidence of remediation in which to pass this exam in order to meet the requirements for a standard 5-year license. So in essence, we do have students who are trying to get through a teacher prep program who cannot pass the basic skills tests in reading, writing, and math. We also have some of those teachers currently teaching in the classrooms for 3 years. The governor's recommendation is that students should demonstrate academic qualifications and basic skills knowledge prior to entry into a teaching preparation program. And passage of the basic skills test should be a mandatory entrance examination for entry into a program. Elementary teachers are charged with providing a solid background of all subjects at the elementary level. Unfortunately, many teachers are lacking a strong preparation in mathematics. This directly impacts a student's ability to gain a level of understanding in mathematics for future success. The legislature, Board of Teaching, MDE, and many others have wrestled with this concept in reading over the past few years. The end result was to incorporate more reading preparation for all licensure areas and embed more reading content into the elementary exam. This proposal would require more math preparation and embedding more mathematics content into the elementary teacher preparation exam. One-time appropriation of $10,000 is recommended for this rulemaking in fiscal year 2012. Online coursework is also should be a very important part of teacher preparation. Given the technological advance of K-12 students and the likelihood there will continue to be a growing trend in online course offerings, each teacher preparation candidate must complete at least one course online, according to the language in this bill. Effective online courses not only teach content, but also expose learners to the tools needed to successfully work in an online environment. Teacher education programs must also require, according to this language, at least one course designed to teach online pedagogy. Each teacher needs to have a basic understanding of how to assemble and provide instruction in an online learning environment. And this is extremely important now that we're starting to hear more and more from schools that they're starting to have hybrid courses. So this is not just about online providers and teachers who teach for online providers, but also about our regular bricks and mortar traditional schools who are starting to offer more hybrid courses. We also need to update principal licensure standards. To have effective schools, we need to have effective instructional leaders. There has been a lot of emphasis on teacher quality and teacher development, but not necessarily enough in the area of leadership development and specifically principal development, according to the executive director of the American Association of School Administrators. You will have transformation of a school with strong leadership. It will not happen without that leadership. Principal licensure standards will be revised in this language, according to this language, to align with principal training programs with national standards such as NISL and ISLLC. And this would require a one-time appropriation of $100,000 in fiscal year 2011. The next part of this proposal is to incorporate candidate success into teacher and administrator preparation programs. Teacher and administrator preparation programs should be held accountable for the performance of their recommendations for licensure. Data from candidates' success should be factored into the Board of Teaching and Board of School Administrators program review process. Student outcome data can be shared with the Boards of Teaching and School Administrators to use as a part of their process in improving programs. And this information will be valuable in driving changes at the institutional level to increase the effectiveness of teacher and administrator programs. This is something the state of Louisiana has actually worked very hard on, And they were out here recently in Minnesota at the request of Minsky and did explain a little bit about how this works in Louisiana. We also had the state of Wisconsin shared a little bit about their model and method for doing this. The Teacher Evaluation and Teacher Renewal Act is a proposal in this language that gives the importance of teacher preparation the focus that it needs in, for our state. Change is needed in how we support new teachers and evaluate existing teachers. This proposal proposes to strengthen the induction period for new teachers so they are provided with the support they need to become great teachers and leaders. And it also proposes to provide support for all teachers' professional growth and responsibility in improving and the academic achievement growth of students. Requires teacher employment and renewal of that employment at least every 5 years based on academic achievement growth of students. And it proposes to recruit, retain, reward the most highly effective and qualified teachers. In the Teacher Evaluation and Tenure Renewal Act, teacher evaluations should have that meaningful, summative, and formative functions. Good teacher evaluation systems merge these two purposes, and they lead to improved instruction aligned with district school goals. The proposal utilizes a model for teacher evaluation that requires a cycle of review for teachers beyond the traditional probationary period with full formal evaluation at least once every 5 years. And yearly evaluations will enable teachers to build a cumulative portfolio, highlighting professional growth and student achievement, and continued tenure renewal will be based upon this portfolio of work. This one's really exciting because the Minnesota has been working with the University, Board of Teaching has been working with the University of Minnesota and some of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities on a project called the Teacher Performance Assessment Project, TPA, and they are now on a fast track to work with Linda Darling Hammond on putting together what a good work sampling evaluation would be. So we're not just talking about taking a test here, we're talking about putting together work samples for a portfolio and working with one of the best researchers in the nation on what that work sampling should look like.
And Commissioner Segrin, that I agree with you entirely, and she was my choice to be the Secretary of Education. I was baited and switched because she was the advisor all during the campaign.
Yeah. So it's nice that we still get to work with her, even though she's not the Secretary of Education. So we'll have to loop you in on that project.
Thank you.
The English language proficiency standards is another part of this proposal. Since the passage of No Child Left Behind, Minnesota has worked to establish English language proficiency standards and assessments for raising the level of English proficiency. And Title III of No Child Left Behind requires that all states receiving funds establish some ELP standards. Minnesota adopted its current ELP standards in 2003, but only minor adjustments were made to the standards in 2005. So while much work has been done, there is work left to be accomplished, and ELL directors throughout Minnesota have indicated that they need new ELP standards and need to have these woven into our content standards. So development and implementation of ELP standards are an important first step in addressing existing challenges and in improving the way that ELP instruction is delivered. And new standards have the potential to change the landscape for English language learners. Rulemaking costs will be paid for with existing Title III funding. There's also a proposal in this legislation for minimum hours of instruction. Student instructional time is a key component in student learning, and instead of setting a minimum amount of days for Minnesota schools, Governor Plante recommends setting a minimum amount of hours of instruction in the classroom. This will provide flexibility for schools to adjust a calendar schedule to meet the learning needs of their students. In addition, this proposal reinstates an aid penalty for failure to provide the minimum number of hours. Currently, adherence to minimum number of days is discretionary.
And I think at this point we'll let you take a small break, and Mr. Strom has prepared some runs on this proposal, which is also similar to another proposal that we'll hear from represent Benson and Tilbury from the Mandate Reduction Committee, and we were interested in finding out how this affects as individual districts. All of us on this committee like to know that when we use our good policy hats. We also like to use our good pragmatic hats. So, Mr. Strom, could you tell us what you have prepared for us?
Madam Chair, members, the Department of Education collects data on instructional days and hours, actually minutes per day that that are attended at each school site by school grade. So it's a fairly large data file, and the question is how to get it in a form that's helpful to you. What I've done on the first printout, which is the one oriented landscape on the page, is to group by kindergarten, elementary, and secondary the times, the amounts for the average at each building within the district, average for those grade levels. So there may be some weighting issues involved, as some very large facilities might have a smaller number of minutes than a very small facility, and they both have the same weighting in the average. One other caveat, when looking at this data, the data is district reported but isn't used for many purposes right now, so there isn't real good editing, and particularly with the kindergarten data, with all the different models of kindergarten, full day every other day, full day every day, some of the kindergarten numbers may be further further off than others. And as Representative Markford just pointed out, there's one other thing to be kept in mind. This data is for fiscal year 2009, and any special events that happen to districts in that year may affect the hourly numbers. So a lot of caveats to using this data, but the first printout is on the district level, and you can read across in each of the three columns for the instructional days, the minutes per day, and the total hours for the year. The next three printouts are by kindergarten, elementary, and secondary grade, and they just show those programs by grade that would not be meeting the minimum standards established in the department bill. And you can see there are very few of the elementary. There's just a handful on the elementary. And then for the secondary students, there's a fairly large number at the secondary level. And often those are 7th and 8th grades that are still combined with the elementary school and use the elementary calendar. And then there's a kindergarten printout, and as I said, the kindergarten data is the most problematic because I think there's a variety of reporting issues and different models that may make that those numbers somewhat suspect. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick summary of those four printouts in your packet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like all my districts are safe, but some people don't have safe districts. Any questions? Representative Newton.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. When we're looking at this, are we counting an hour of instruction as 50 minutes, 55 minutes, 60 minutes?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to what's counted as a minute of instruction, if it includes the passage time or not. I presume it's simply a measure from the start to the end of the school day, and the department may want to comment on that. But I would presume if the morning bell rings at 8:30 and the afternoon bell at 2:20, that would be the time that's counted. But I don't know that for sure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Strom. And Madam Chair, I question that as to when it says a minimum amount of hours of instruction in the governor's bill, if he's talking about actual instruction time or if he's including passing time and testing as well.
And Representative Newton, would you like to have Commissioner Clinton
yes.
answer that question? Commissioner Clensing, speaking through Dr. Melcher.
And I'm really glad Dr. Melcher came up and clarified, because it's just speaking to instructional time, so it wouldn't include passing time or lunch.
Would or would not?
Would not.
Would not. Any other questions on the handouts? And we are saving questions per Representative Graflo's request till the end of the PowerPoint. So if you're interested in asking a question, just signify or signal that you want to get on the list here. Okay, thank you, Commissioner Clensing.
There's just a few more pieces to this bill that I will go over. The next one is transparency and contract reporting. In order to provide transparent information to the public regarding teacher contracts, Governor Pallante recommends school districts report negotiated contract settlements to the Minnesota Department of Education. That information collected would include salary, benefit, and retirement costs and total package percentages for the contract. That appropriation would be then $15,000 for fiscal year 2011 and $5,000 for fiscal year 2012 to 13. The last one is the E-Pass data collection, or maybe not last, close to last. In this one, if, for those of you who may not be familiar with educational planning and assessment system, this is a set of assessments that provides longitudinal, systematic approach to education and career planning. It aligns very well to the ACT students take it in 8th grade and 10th grade, sometimes referred to as the Explore in 8th grade and the Plan in 10th grade. And they are tests that give feedback to districts, students, and parents on how on track they are to being ready for a college-ready score on the ACT. So the state does pay for these, for the tests to be administered in the districts that choose to use them, but not all districts choose to use them. The data captured by the E-Pass program provides very valuable college readiness indicators and tools for students, parents, schools, and the state, and we do have some grant money that we've been using to train most of the counselors in the state on how to read and use this kind of data with the parents and the students. The program currently mandates the Commissioner of Education to provide ACT Explore tests for students in grade 8 and ACT Plan tests for students in grade 10, and the state pays for the test costs for school districts and charters that choose to participate. Our goal is to develop an interactive, searchable data warehouse that requires the inclusion of these scores along with other measures, MCAs, course-taking, attendance, etc., number of measures that this particular committee has expressed interest in and put into legislation in the past. Funding is essential to the development of an essential electronic system linked to the E-Pass data that supports robust and reliable planning. The E-Pass program is projected to have unexpended funds of about $190,000 at the end of the biennium, and this proposal would capture those funds to cover the cost of data collection analysis at the state level for longitudinal data analysis and for districts to have a more user-friendly portal for being able to translate some of the E-Pass data and compare it to MCA data, AP data, and any other data that might be in the data warehouse. The extended time revenue change in this bill proposes to change the formula for extended time revenue, resulting in a savings of $5,000 per fiscal year. The current extended time calculation is the greater the current year extended time pupil units or a portion of the current year in the previous year. So the district can generate revenue the year after a program is discontinued. This proposal allows districts and charters to generate extended time revenue only if they provide extended time programming, such as extended day or extended week programs or summer school in that current school year. This would make extended time revenue consistent with LEP revenue.
And members, for many of us who care about this, our fiscal staff assures us that this is a technical change, so not something we all need to leap out of our chairs about if we like the auditor's report. Commissioner Klinzing.
Thank you for that clarification. And then the last is the Department of Education budget reductions. And in this, you will see that it reduces the general fund operating budget and special revenue budget by 3% of unspent funds in fiscal years 2010 and fiscal year 2011. General fund reductions do include a 3% reduction to the Board of Teaching, Board of School Administrators, a 3% reduction to the Educate Parents Partnership, and kindergarten entrance assessment. And it's also as a reduction of 6.5 full-time equivalent positions and a reduction in supplies and equipment. Special revenue reductions are a one-time transfer of carry-forward funds to the general fund. Reduction in general fund operating budget and special revenue budget by 3% of unspent funds is for fiscal year 2010 and 11. General fund reductions include that 3% to the BOT and BOSA. And let's see, I already read those. So the Department of Education budget reductions, I think we're going to have Tom come up and go through those. Well,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is
Representative Garofalo.
This is the property tax recognition shift, the K-12 shift to 7327, and then the operating budget reduction. Again, that we've previously talked about in committee. These are the governor's on allotments, with the exception of the operating budget. I'm just looking to put those in statute.
Very good. And I think before we take questions now, we'll have you do your amendment, Representative Garofalo. We have it, have had it passed out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll move the A10-2245 amendment.
Representative Garofalo moves the A10-2245 amendment. Any questions? Representative Garofalo, do you want to just tell us basically?
Yeah, this is just a typo. Just cleaning up some numbers that were entered wrong.
Very good. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to kind of step back a little bit with the testifier here, as I did this morning, I guess, with Commissioner Siegel, and I would like to leave to the good offices of Chair Greiling and Amayani's the digging into the details of this particular proposal, because you're more competent than I on that.
Representative Benson, I think you're pretty confident.
Well, thank you, but you're covering up for me, so I appreciate it, though. When you look at these proposals, though, to me, they seem generally kind of traditional approaches, mostly gatekeeping, evaluation, new rules, preparation of new teachers coming into the profession, and all those things have their place. But I noticed both you and Commissioner Siegel quoted studies indicating that the most significant thing in student improvement, learning outcomes improvement, are the professionals in the classroom with them. And yet I do not see much here other than the gatekeeping, which I suppose for people who might want to enter the profession, like a profession that is not so easy that anybody can get into, because it has more status. But other than that, I don't see the Department of Education doing much about devising ways to improve the role and the profession of teaching itself. I don't know if it's because they do not see that as their role, that they're involved in these other kinds of aspects, and that should be left up to the professional organizations, the teachers' unions maybe, or people from the university level who come up with new ideas for things. But I'm disappointed that the Department of Education is not zeroing in on the professionalization of teaching so that we can really attract those top people and retain them, as Korea does, as Japan does, as Finland does, and other countries that are outdoing us, frankly, in student learning outcomes. The whole culture revolving around the profession of teaching is seen differently there. And I would just like to advise and suggest to the Department of Education, they ought to broaden their perspective more and go for that, since you acknowledge that the most important thing we could possibly do would be to retain the top quality people out of universities and retain them in the classroom. I really don't see that you're doing anything much in that regard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Which one of you wants to take that?
I can start off.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple of thoughts. First of all, Representative Benson, I think it's important for members of the committee that when we're talking about international standards and international cultures, I got a real eye-opener last year. For the first time, I got to travel overseas, and I actually got to go to South Korea through the State Department. And one of the things that I requested to get put on the agenda and they actually put on there is we got to visit some of the schools in South Korea. And one of the interesting facts over there is just how insanely high their teacher quality is over in South Korea. And if you were looking at a spreadsheet and if you were looking at the charts, you'd say, oh my gosh, you know, what is it that they're doing? What are they doing to institute this culture? Well, one of the things that you learn when you're actually in South Korea and you visit is that it's still very much a sexist society, so that women have equal access to education. However, when it comes to actually getting jobs in the profession, they are still, for the most part, largely excluded from managerial and professional positions and are encouraged and are socially permitted to go into teaching. So if you went across the United States of America and imagine you wiped out all the boardrooms, all the nonprofits of all these leaders, and you took these women and put them into our classrooms, right, how absolutely amazing our teacher quality would be. Now, I'm not advocating that, Representative Benson, just to be very clear, but I do think it's important when we're talking about culture to understand that dynamic. I want to be very clear. I'm not advocating for that position, but that point was brought up. But I would say, I think if you look at Section 9 in Article 2, the tenure reforms, I think that's something in this bill that does address that the points that you brought up.
Yeah. Just a quick follow-up. Yes, I've always argued that the public education in America went along really well until, luckily, women were given an opportunity to move into other professions. My mother would have been a person like that. So you have a point there. But still, the math test results and science attainment and so in many of these other countries, they are better than ours. And that's and so now that means that I think you just proved my argument. That means we need to work harder to find ways to attract and retain the top people. There are some males in the society, too, who have a brain and who could be successful in the classroom as well. There are. There really are. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Benson. No more legislators on the list for now. Is there any testimony on the bill from the audience? Any? We'll go back to legislators then. If anyone changes their mind, you'll have to wave at me because I didn't see anybody. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Groffler, Commissioner Klensing, there's a lot I like in this. The focus on the high standards for teachers, adding some focus on math content preparation for our elementary school teachers. I think these are the kinds of things that can pay dividends in the long run. Another part I really like is Article 2, Section 8, mentoring for probationary teachers. I know that our school district made this a big component of our alternative teacher professional pay system plan. Through that so-called QCOM program, we are given money to fund this additional mentoring of our younger teachers by our more experienced teachers. One of the things that school districts tend to run into, one of the challenges they face in developing good mentoring programs, is the cost, the additional time and resources necessary, the lack of a desire to take good experienced teachers out of the classroom because, of course, we need them teaching students as well. Is there any sense of a cost associated with this and a way to pay that cost in this plan?
Commissioner Klensing.
Thank you, Representative Morgan, members of the committee. You make a good point about the importance of master teachers in any good mentoring program. And this, in fact, I think we were thinking that the tenure renewal will give these teachers who are these master teachers an opportunity to really showcase their achievements and their portfolio and being excellent master teachers, give them a chance to show that what they've been able to do. There's no specific appropriation here for funding master teachers in addition to the appropriations that districts currently have, but there's a hope in Section 8 that we'll get a good definition of and strong understanding of what that master teacher can do and does so that more districts will be working towards and possibly even the state and the districts together working towards specific ways of funding those opportunities.
Representative Morgan.
If I could just add to that, Madam Chair, thank you very much, Commissioner Klensing. Then I'd like to call your attention to the next section, Article 2, Section 9, the teacher tenure renewal system language. And here's where I see a contradiction in goals and means in this bill. In Article 2, Section 8, with the mentorship, the goal is to have experienced teachers share their experience, their expertise, their curriculum, their pedagogy skills with these young teachers so that the students of those younger, less experienced teachers can benefit more and more quickly, and those teachers can grow and learn faster how to become better teachers. That's traditionally been the atmosphere and the environment that those of us who've been in the classroom and been teachers have appreciated and respected so much. And a lot of us, that's why we stay in the profession, because it's so collegial and so collaborative. And we get to, those of us who've been around a while get to share what we know and what we've learned with those who are just new to the profession. But then in Section 9, the proposal is that every 5 years, those experienced teachers are going to be compared to other teachers, presumably in the building, particularly their student performance, and risk losing their jobs if, say, my student performance as an experienced teacher doesn't match up with the student's performance of those younger teachers that I've taken time to mentor and help. So I'm wondering if there isn't a contradiction built into this reform proposal that says we want to do something that we in the profession know helps and research shows helps, and that is mentor young teachers, and at the same time we want to propose perhaps penalties to a possible outcome of good mentorship, and that is the success of the young teachers, students that we're mentoring. Have you thought about that? Has that come up in your conversations?
And Commissioner, before the Commissioner answers, in the Policy Committee, which we seem to have more talkative people in the Policy Committee, don't we, Representative Mariani?
I think it was the coffee.
We never can get through all the questions, and here we seem to have more time. But that's because the policy in this bill is, I think, more controversial, and the funding we're just thrilled about, and this is the Finance Committee. Yeah. But we had a long discussion in policy on your very question, and I think it's very good to bring it out here as well, since we don't have finance questions, that this bill basically ends tenure. So, Commissioner Klinzing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morgan, I don't see it as a penalty for a teacher who is as high quality and such a master mentor as you describe, for them to have an opportunity every 5 years to showcase their portfolio to their instructional leader of their building. And unless they're completely deficient in what they're doing, this is a tenure renewal, so that tenure is renewed because their portfolio is so good. And I think that if they're teaching other teachers to be effective teachers, that they probably know their craft and can have more to showcase than anybody else in that building. So I really don't see it as a penalty, nor do I see it as an antagonistic experience for that teacher. I don't think it's going to do anything to collegiality. Rather, I think it builds up the profession. Just like doctors and lawyers who take their boards regularly, I think teachers, and then we're not even talking about taking boards here, we're talking about a portfolio of work that they've done. Look at how well I've mentored this teacher down here and how great their scores are. They can almost be taking some credit for that leadership they've done in the building.
Hey, we have two people that have signaled from the audience that they want to testify, so I'm going to take them now and then go to the five legislators. We have Mariani, Marquardt, Anderson, Dietrich, and Detmer. But first, I'm going to call on Roger Arnson and then Jan Allswager. Mr. Arnson, welcome.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, rather, and members, I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the two school principal organizations, and I understand that this was in the Policy Committee this morning. And it's the time of year when stuff tends to move rather quickly, and we're getting kind of a look at this on the fly, and I apologize for that. But a couple of things that we would want to talk about as we move along with this. On page 12, the national standards with the Board of School Administrators, we should talk to, we'll talk to them a bit about that and come back to you. In fact, I have a meeting with Mary McBee today. She's the chair of that board. She's the principal of St. Paul Central High School, and I suspect that's a good idea, but we haven't talked to them about it. I don't know, and I haven't cross-referenced how much money is in here for this board, but it's a good thing for the committee to be aware of the fact that this board, the Board of School Administrators, was created a half a dozen years ago. The legislature doesn't like creating new boards. It has a minuscule budget. $75 is collected from 2,000 school principals in Minnesota and a sprinkling of community ed directors and the superintendents. They barely get by. And so if you are going to have them do some rulemaking, they're going to have some cash to do that. A couple other things that are would have to get worked out. As you get to 17 on mentoring for probationary teachers on page 17, this incorporates the concept of peer review and professional learning committees. A lot of districts don't have these or engage in other processes that work well for them. And as you notice, this is developing changing processes from may to shall. So when you ratchet that up, there's going to be some people saying, hey, we don't do this. We do other things that are successful. Give us some flexibility. You may not want to mandate that piece through the peer review process. And I think it's important to keep in mind that by and large, when teachers serve their probationary period, at the end of that period, the principal and the superintendent, with input from others, make a decision as to whether or not that person is going to move from probationary status into the next status. And every time we do one of these changes that adds some conditions on that, and we say no to somebody, they litigate these with us. You know, so we're supposed to do 3 evaluations a year of probationary teachers. What's the consequence if we don't do 3 probationary evaluations? If you add that we have to have a peer review committee as well, what's the consequence if we don't? And some of this, I think, is a policy piece where, Representative Garofalo and others have well-intended practices, but sometimes putting them into statute has some unintended litigation consequences that you may not want to, that we may want to talk about anyway as to how that's going to work. In 19, we're back to the, you know, what the evaluation must include on probationary periods as well again, I'm certain that districts would rather have you have the department conduct seminars on what are good evaluation processes, how can we do these, you know, what things can we do to enhance the evaluation process and make them effective in improving student performance. There's some studies about that, Madam Chair. I think you and I visited about that as well. But putting this in the Teacher Tenure Act, again, is going to add some litigation issues. And I might say that it says that the evaluation must be conducted by a licensed administrator. I was out of part of the full committee, the policy committee this morning. One of the things that you may, but I understand was raised in the committee and that the chair raised the question of is that there's no requirement that charters actually be run by a licensed administrator. And you know, is the intent here to pull charters into this stuff as well when you're talking about doing evaluations? And in fact, do the charters end up in these probationary period statutes? I think you may want to have that discussion in the committee here. There's a lot to this, and like I said, our sense is that it's very well intended here. But the other piece I think then that comes in is the 5-year plan. And I think there's some definitional pieces where the 5-year tenure piece appears directed at classroom teachers. And when we say teacher in this statute, in 122A40 and 122A41, I think most of the committee knows this, but for whatever reason, the cities of the first class have their own tenure act. So that's why we always have those two references. But Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth are governed by a different tenure act. But when we say teacher in both of those statutes, teacher includes principal, it includes community ed, it includes your special ed director, it includes your deputy superintendents, and these statutes are kind of directed towards, or these proposals here are directed towards dealing with classroom teachers. And so the definitional piece doesn't work, I think, the way that Representative Graffa wants it to work and the governor wants it to work. And so we'll keep working with people, and we have a long history of that, Madam Chair. I have to say we were kind of sloughing off in the back there today, so I appreciate getting called up. And anything else, we're happy to help with. I answer any questions that you may
Thank
have.
Thank you very much, members. Mr. Yeah. Arnson. Any questions for Mr. Arnson? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Arnson. Actually, this is part of the question I wanted to ask earlier, and I'm glad that you reiterated the issue that was raised this morning on the licensed administrator conducting the review. I do think that that does deserve serious discussion. We're still talking about public school kids in our schools, and so I think we need to have a serious discussion of how that gets included. I understand on page 17 the change from the may to the shall. And I have to say, perhaps like Representative Morgan, with some reservations, there are things here that I like. I like the sort of assertive new set of expectations that are being laid out here. I don't know how we do that unless we change the may to a shall here. But I do hear your perspective in terms of that's raising some issues that are meant to. That they need to be interpreted in terms of possible litigation issues in regards to contract. I guess we're just going to have to wrestle through some of that because, you know, I would hate for us to have, you know, these two important competing things and then having, quite frankly, having that issue wind up trumping what I think is probably a good movement forward for us. But let me ask this. On that issue, does that largely come down to an issue of resources for schools and school districts? In other words, why wouldn't you do any of the prescriptive actions here? It seems to me that perhaps you wouldn't do them if you just simply don't currently have the capacity and/or the resources to meet that capacity. Will that answer the question, or are we still stuck with wrestling with, you know, some legal vagaries here?
Mr. Arnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I think there may be a lot of different practices. Like you said, are these good practices? I think that they are. I think there's a difference between size and resource. Mm-hmm. And so when you take rural districts, they don't have the numbers maybe to have peer review committees. Some folks have very strong feelings about on the peer review process that we have to put subs in classes when we're doing that, and that not enough learning takes place when we have substitutes in there. And so can we do this in some fashion that doesn't take our good teachers out of the classroom? It's those kind of considerations. And so I wouldn't link it, you know, in at least what I hear from principals, of just to resources. But there may be other practices. And a lot of the peer review works very well. Districts that do QComp, that I know I have some knowledge of St. Francis, half of the reviews that are done in St. Francis under their QComp are done by teachers. They think that that's been successful. So I think whatever we do, we want people to have a lot of flexibility. And by granting them a lot of flexibility, keep them out of the legal piece of it.
Thank you.
I hope that's responsible.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, while we any other questions for Mr. Arnson? While we have Jan, thank you, Jan Alswager coming up, I just want to clarify that the Department of Education has clarified that instructional time, per Representative Newton's question, does include passing time for secondary students and supervised recess for elementary, but it does not include meals. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Loves Jan Alswager. Jan Alswager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alswager, Education, Minnesota. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble concentrating right now.
It's hard to concentrate when you have a beat sitting next to you. He embarrassed himself.
I think it's the first time my face has ever turned red in community.
Two beats.
And that is quite difficult, too, by the way. I think that a number of proposals out there, including the governor, I believe his intentions are all very good and that he wants to improve student achievement. He wants to improve the quality of the teachers. And we're right there side by side with him on that. The issue is, how do you do it? And I sometimes think that people, individuals around the country, think that all you need to do is say, teachers, do this, we expect this, we're going to give you some resources, maybe not enough, and you have to just change your teaching style, change what you do, and then you will make the kids succeed no matter what. But remember that kids come to school with a variety of needs, with a variety of different family situations, income levels. And I believe I said in the other committee that I took a look at the map of the persistently low-performing schools in the state. Our organization put a map together, and I think I passed it out at the other committee. And then I looked, I did a search on the web for children in poverty in Minnesota. And the Children's Defense Fund has a map in through Kids Count to show where the poverty areas are. And you know, you can lay those school districts, those schools in the poverty counties. Not every poverty county has a persistently low-performing school today, but they may soon. And my point is, in some of these proposals, we seem to think that we can make the teacher do it, and it'll be okay. Or we'll fire all the teachers in the building. Or we just won't renew them after 5 years. But as a teacher, I would like to have the most challenging kids. Does that necessarily mean that my test scores will be the best? Not necessarily. Does that mean that the kids that I have in my classroom, because I am a great teacher, have all been fed in the morning, that their parents are very secure in a relationship with no dysfunction, that there isn't mental illness in the family that is causing some significant needs, they have health insurance, they have health care? I know I'm going a little bit on this, but it's not a simple solution to say, this is what we do, teachers, and then you're going to do it, and if you don't, in 5 years, if your portfolio doesn't look good enough, you're gone. Education Minnesota has put together a program called Teachers as Learners and Leaders, TALL. We've spent thousands of dollars on this program, and it's all about quality professional development for teachers to improve the teaching profession and to improve the skills of the teachers, I should say, for the purpose of improving student achievement. And it's all based on action research, taking data from the school district, from the school building, test data, analyzing it, and determining how can you best develop your staff development to make changes. We think that's the route to go, rather than the punitive measures that we seem to be leaping towards. We certainly have concerns with the tenure renewal system, and we do, however, think that teachers should be evaluated seriously by people who are well-trained and understand evaluation. And we do believe that teachers should improve their teaching and be successful. Absolutely. Tenure, I think some people think is a, if you have tenure, you have that job for life. No, you don't. As an organization, we have worked with teachers who it was time for them to leave. When I was a field staff person, I worked with a teacher who it was time for her to leave. So the union is proactive in that way, but also the administrators need to do their job evaluating. So I think we're trying to change a system that isn't necessarily broken, but could be shaped up a little bit. One of the things that tenure or continuing contract does is creates a system where you have healthy watchdogs looking over the system and healthy advocates. As a teacher, I knew because I had continuing contract status that was continuing not to end in 5 years, so I had to be careful on year number four. It's not like I had something coming up next fall or something like that. I knew that I had my job, as long as I was doing well, my evaluations were good, I had a job. It meant that in a special ed IEP meeting, if I felt a student needed extra help from a paraprofessional, student support assistant, or some special needs, I knew that I could, as a professional, state what I felt that those kids needed. There are some teachers in the state, I would say outside of the regular public system, that if they open their mouth and advocate too much in the wrong direction for a student, for a professional issue, that they might be seen as creating problems, not going along with administration, and as a result, can lose their job. With continuing contract or tenure, all it means is this. You have a right to due process. That means that you can be terminated for some specific serious issues that have happened. Immediate termination. But if it's not that, you have the right to a hearing. That's all continuing contract and tenure is. You have a right to due process. Administrators should be evaluating their teachers. Teachers should be improving the areas in which they need help. If they are not, there is a system to terminate them. And so when you put in a 5-year tenure tract, what you are really doing is taking away due process at the end of the 5 years, meaning that you can grab onto some other people. Let these people go. Now, when you're in a real tough budget situation and you've got expensive teachers, it certainly would be a cost-saving measure. And I don't think that somebody would want to do that, but you know what the stresses are in our school district. So the system has been working well. Can it improve? Certainly, and we'll be there with you to take a look at it. But this system, we believe, does not work well.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Allschweiger? Otherwise, we're going back to the list. And so who has their question for Ms. Allschweiger? Representative Dabney and Mariani, and then we'll go back to the list, which is on it. Representative Marquardt, Dietrich, Detmer, Ward, and then maybe this is your question. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allschweiger, I'd like to explore for a moment your contention around more senior expensive teachers and the pressures that a school district might experience to move them out under whatever the tenure renewal process would be as a cost saving to the school district. If I'm 57, 58, 59, 60, top of the salary schedule, close to or maybe even at the point of rule of 90 by that point, but continuing to work for whatever variety of reasons, including the cost of health care or the impact that the Bush recession has had on my 401k, IRA, and the like. If I am moved out, doesn't that present a scenario where I access my TRA benefits earlier? And because I got to do something. And so we end up moving the cost of that senior teacher from the school district to the state pension funds and the state general fund support for that.
Ms. Allschweiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, you're absolutely right. You put another burden on another area in the state, the pension fund. But in addition, these individuals, let's say at 58 years old, probably are not able to afford the health insurance that was in the district. And very likely they are going, and the amount that a Minnesota teacher gets in pensions is not very much when they retire. So now you're going to look at people going into a system where they need to have health care, whether it's MCHA or MinCare or whatever. I mean, there's a whole variety of possibilities.
I don't think they can go to MinCare. The GAMC people have taken that.
Oh.
Ms. Allswager, sorry.
There are additional costs, absolutely. Would it save the district money? Sure. Would it cause burdens financially in other areas, possibly in the state budget? Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was late for this committee today because I was spending my afternoon in the Health and Human Services Committee discussing MCHA, and there's no happiness there either. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Ms. Allswager, at the risk of getting becoming overly controversial or getting in trouble, I want to suggest that, you know, we keep using, you know, language about whether the system is broken or not. I want to suggest that I don't think that that's helpful, and I hear that from both left, right, and, you know, so I'm not pointing this just at you, but at the same time, there's something that's not right. And the not right nature of our K-12 system, in my opinion, requires more than just tinkering around the edges. And I think what I'm looking for from any of these proposals that either we come up with or the executive branch comes up with is, how do we do something more than tinker? And absolutely, how do we do something that balances some very important principles here, and you've laid out some important principles relative to the members that you represent. I would say that in the case of the teachers who are fearful for speaking out on behalf of their students that they care about because they're not with the program, I hear that a lot. I know that that's true. But I would say that the issue then is that we need to change the program, and so that if the dominant kind of set of expectations, and I think that, you know, here it's not perfect, but I think we've got some frameworks working here that could change the dominant set of expectations in our K-12 public sector. If we change those in a way, it seems to me, that where that brave teacher wants to argue in front of their, on behalf of their students, relative to the kind of steps that are being perhaps laid out here with the multiple ways in which we can assess teacher efficacy with students, I think it makes it, I actually think it makes it potentially more defensible for a teacher to be able to argue on behalf of their students. And I guess what I'm saying, getting at, is that I think it's inevitable. Maybe it's a fad, you know, Representative Garofalo, who knows? I mean, we all live through all sorts of legislative policy initiatives over time, but I don't think we're talking about a fad when we're talking about some kind of system that ties student achievement with accountability to the system, to the student, and to teachers, and frankly, members, ultimately to us as legislators in terms of how we make our decisions here. I know this is the kind of talk that doesn't win you a whole lot of friends from either left or right or anywhere, but I will say this relative to this proposal. We said this earlier in my committee when Representative Greiling, I thought, did a terrific job of sort of deconstructing the provision around the Tenure Act, particularly the language on page 20. I think perhaps Representative Garofalo, I'll tell you the same thing I told the commissioner then, that I think we don't need to necessarily go there on lines 34 and 35 in order to put in play the powerful notions of how do we create a framework for tying teacher effectiveness of student achievement that follows some of the prescriptive directives laid out here for schools and teachers. I'm intrigued by the notion that we may just be able to be creative enough to not have to do this particular piece in order to put those mechanisms in place. And I really want to challenge us to think about that as a common meeting ground here if we move forward with this. But I will say this, members, whether we move forward with this or not, Madam Chair, I just think the tide is, it's pretty obvious to me. And maybe it's not obvious to others, and I respect that. But, you know, I represent communities, and I work intimately with communities where we have massive loss of opportunities. And it is inconceivable to me to think that one of the areas where we can do better in has to do with teacher efficacy, and that a way to be able to measure that and assess that really has to do with elements of student achievement. I don't think, and I reject, that those would be totally and even, quite frankly, primarily tied to standardized test results. I think that's, you know, totally unfair. I don't think that even is supported by research. I think that the real issue here is what are the measures that we're going to use. They should be fair. They should be the multiple measures concept. But members, I would suggest that if we're just going to say no to a changing framework and paradigm here, I don't think we're serving. I think we're going against the tide of history, and I think we're not serving not only our students well, but I think we're not serving our teachers well in this process. I know it's a very dangerous conversation to have, but I think there's no better place to have it than right here in the legislature.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. I know you think a lot about what controversies you're wading into on behalf of students. I'm going to have Ms. Alschweiger answer briefly. Representative Ward has decided his question is for Ms. Alschweiger, so we'll take him. And I really, really am going to be insistent that we get to Representative Marquardt, Dietrich, and Detmer, who've been waiting very patiently. So, Ms. Alschweiger, if you could answer briefly, and we'll go to Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
First, she wants to answer briefly to Representative Mariani.
Okay.
Ms. Alschweiger.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I actually think that your comments are very thoughtful. And we would love to talk with you about evaluation and improving teachers' instruction. We're right there with you. I mean, it is one reason why we started the TALL program, because we want that to happen too. My comments are on mainly the lines 34 and 35 that you talked about and anything else in there. But improving student teachers, improving teaching through evaluation, we don't have a problem with that. We would love to work with you to figure out how best to do that and make it meaningful and proactive.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Alschweiger, I want to go back to two comments you made. One of them being tenure is simply means a right to a hearing, due process. And in that process, is it not correct that when a teacher is evaluated, if there's a problem outside of a major serious criminal kind of problem, that teacher is given an opportunity to have a correction plan? Is that correct?
Ms. Alschweiger.
I believe I'm understanding your question correctly. I believe that's yes.
Okay,
yes.
So thank you, Madam Chair. It is a process. Tenure is a process. The correction plan is an opportunity to an educator, like any other business or any other organization, would take an employee and say, here's what you need to do to improve, correct? I mean, rather than just say, no, you're done. And that kind of goes back to what Representative Morgan and Commissioner Clinzing were talking about earlier. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, that there is a process here. It's not just you're good, you're bad, you're gone, you stay. There's a process with tenure, and it's a right to hearing. The other thing you said was, who knows what that child happened to them that day or that morning or whatever, when we talk about based on achievement growth. And I want to make one more point. A good Ms. Alschweiger, you've been in this long enough to know that an educator that is effective and an educator that does a remarkable job with kids. When there's a problem kid, where does that kid go, Ms. Alschweiger?
Ms. Altmeyer.
What kind of a classroom?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, classroom like I used to have. I would get some of the toughest kids. I would, because I loved what I did, and I was a darn good teacher.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Ms. Altmeyer. Thank you, Madam Chair. And you're correct that a lot of the difficult kids get placed in some of the, and I don't want to say better educators, but the educators that make connections, great connections with kids. And so when we look at a tenure, we look at this kind of a tenure kind of a reform, let's keep in mind that, you know, let's have a level playing field. Not unlike, if a teacher has a remarkable 99% outcome rate of all the kids in that class, where does that teacher go to get better than that? So as I read this, it says, you know, if you're at 99% and you get and you improve, you could be gone. So those are some points that I wanted to make based on testimony.
Thank you very much, Representative Marquardt.
Oh. Thank you very much. And these are just some general comments. And actually, for Representative Rothwell and Assistant Commissioner Klinzing, is that, first of all, what I like in the bill is the fact that you focus on things with the teacher. Because I do believe that the teacher's effectiveness is the number one key to student achievement and improvement. And I, Representative Mariani, I'm just, what you said, you're right on the mark there. I mean, I think everything should be geared towards student achievements. And I think when we do try to link that with teachers, we immediately pull back. And we wouldn't have to look just at achievement, we look at improvement. So you could start out with a lower class, so to speak, and look at the improvement. I like the idea of student surveys. You know, I think that's really important. We need to move in that direction. We just can't say no once we talk about some sort of a measuring system for teachers, because we have to move in that direction. So that's all good. But the one part I want to mention here is on that minimum hours of instruction. I actually think that's moving in the opposite direction of reform. Because I think if the state were to set high standards for students, and a student achieves that by the time they're 16, they should be able to graduate and move on. I mean, now, of course, what would you do with your sports program? You know, that's number one. But, I mean, this idea of seat time is really irrelevant. If you've got an excellent teacher and you've got high standards and those students are meeting that, you know, we all know that a good instructor can instruct just as much in 1 hour as a poor one can in a week. And so, I mean, I just think, you know, when you even look at savings costs, and I shouldn't be talking fiscal, but look at, you had students leaving at the age of 17. You'd have one less year of, you know, paying for students. They move them into college or the workforce a year earlier also, and we're going to be weaker we've got less people moving into the workforce. But anyway, have you looked at that at all in looking at, you know, if you hit your standards, no matter how old you are? I mean, this idea of adolescence until the age of 18, our grandparents didn't have that. I mean, adolescence.
Do you know why Representative Garofalo is smiling so widely?
I don't know.
You may not have forgotten it. That was his bill from last year.
Yeah. Oh, okay. If it's a Representative Garofalo bill, I take back everything.
We've
kind of captured kids and I think held them into isolation into this adolescence until 18, and for no real reason for that.
Right.
And so I think, okay.
Representative Graffel, briefly, because we do still have Representative Dietrich and Detmer who've been waiting a long time.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, you're totally right, and I think the perspective, at least this author, the reason the hours are in there is the state is paying for a service right now. We should have a minimum standard of what we're paying for throughout the state. But with regards to your comments, I've got a bill for you. It's House File 1177. It's the Early Graduation Achievement Act. I got a fiscal note on it. It actually saves the state of Minnesota money, because a diploma is not a certificate of attendance. It is a measurement of a certain set of knowledge, and once you achieve that standard, we don't want you just to be sitting around doing nothing. Get moving on. Get going to college. Get going to the military or technical school or whatever. But Representative Marquardt, I totally agree with you. You're absolutely right.
And once we get our fiscal note, we may be talking about this more. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just, I have two questions. and they might not be best answered today, and I'm okay with that. I would be happy to get the information later because I've been interested in this for quite some time. I'd like to shift gears a little bit and move over to the principal, the leadership of a school, and I couldn't agree with you more as far as the quote that you absolutely need strong leadership in a school to have a successful climate, student achievement, all those other things. And so the reaction to that is principal licensure standards will be revised. I would be very interested to know what those standards are going to consist of. If they are going to change behavior. And that is, I think, sometimes we read and see and hear all these wonderful, wonderful, wonderful words. And I want at some point to be reassured that it is going to change behaviors. So the first thing that I would ask in regards to that, so we want our principals to be better trained to be able to coach our teachers better and get better results out of our classroom. So we would propose going to a portfolio system, which I think is excellent. Most good teachers say that that's the way they would like to assess their students. So why would we not expect out of teachers what we profess we expect out of students? So if we're going to go to the portfolio system, is there any pay associated to that? Do the principals, if they are looking at this portfolio system, do they have any power to change people's behaviors based on that portfolio system? Do they have merit pay associated with it? Do they have a due process to eliminate people that are not, that their portfolio is not good enough? So what are the stakes, or is this just going to shift the climate of the schools to creating good portfolios to maintain the status quo?
And so Representative Dietrich has said she's fine with getting the answer later or now. So Commissioner Clinton, your preference.
I can do it right now and be quick, and if you want more follow-up, then we can get into more detail down the road. I do think standards do change behavior. They're not enough to change behavior, so they're not sufficient, but they're necessary for setting the goals around how the systems, what they should benchmark their actions against, or in this case, even what the principals should benchmark their actions to. It changes program requirements at local universities for the preparation of these principals, and we're hoping, and I can't tell you what's going to be in these because we are not making that determination here. We are saying the Board of School Administrators should be devising those standards, much like we pitch the standards development and the academic K-12 standards rulemaking process to practitioners who are in the field. With this respect to what's going to be the incentive here for principals to, I wasn't sure if it was a question about whether the teachers or the principals would, whether it was their, which behavior we were incentivizing based on your question. In this proposal, the portfolios that the principals would be reviewing of the teachers, we're hoping that the principals would, through this tenure renewal process, have that opportunity to only, you know, continue those contracts and of those teachers who have the best portfolios. So that's where I think that this is a comprehensive proposal in trying to change the behavior of the system and not just set some standards there.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Representative Dietrich, and we have one more minute, so I don't know if that was both your questions.
No, I just have one other question then about that. So this, we're going to add a new layer of teacher review for tenure only to provide ongoing tenure. That's what I'm confused about here. You know, and I'll just be very honest. When I was a teacher, I could have cared less about tenure. I mean, it did not matter to me. What mattered to me was my performance in the classroom. And so I just wonder, associating this portfolio just to tenure, is that the point?
Commissioner Segrin. Cleansing. Yeah.
Well, the tenure is the continuation of your job, which you said what mattered to you is your job performance. And this would give teachers that opportunity every 5 years to show their portfolio around their job performance, and not just pegged to standardized tests. There's a list of other criteria here, including growth of students, which, of course, is something that would be very important and a teacher would be very proud of in those most at-risk schools. And then also the, so it's not, that job performance piece is there for teachers, and it's not, it's not an additional layer, because as Jan Alzweiger testified, this should be already happening. This kind of review should be happening, and if it's not happening, then that's part of the problem that we have with, I think, the efficacy of teaching and the culture around that.
Yeah, and with my apologies to Representative Detmer, because we're out of time. Representative Graffel, if you can give a 30-second wrap-up, we'll hear it. Otherwise, we'll skip it.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the hearing. I just want to say thank you very much to Representative Mariani. Sometimes, I think if I would have delivered those exact same words, I don't think they would have had the power and the meaning that he did. And if you look at other urban school districts across the nation, he is spot on right about what's going on. And this train is leaving the station. We need to decide if we're going to be in the engine or the caboose.
Thank you very much. Meeting's adjourned.